Do-do-do-do. Get your s'mores all toasty and s'morey. Do-do-do-do.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
Welcome to S'more Adventures. On tonight's episode, joining me is Sophia and Irina, and we will be discussing how would you survive the cabin in the woods?
Hello.
Spoiler, I wouldn't.
Yeah, I was going to say, we die, the end. This is over.
I think a lot of people die in this movie, but how would you be one of the last people to survive, I guess, would be the better question here.
Well, I think first we can start, like, what... I don't know if you guys looked. I mean, I paused when I was rewatching this to look at the different items they had in the cellar, because each one is supposed to be linked to a monster, right?
Right.
Like, I know there's a few things I would avoid touching, like the dolls, because I hate creepy dolls. And I don't know. But I think I would have gone with the film reel, like Marty did.
I had this like feeling going into it that I was just... before we even get to the monsters, where I was like horrified I had to watch a horror movie. Just to quickly set it up, Fazila, when you asked me what I could talk about on here, I was like, nothing, and had an existential crisis. But I think, like, as far as monsters and stuff go, I know you all play D&D and things like that, but I felt like such, what's the opposite of an expert? Like, I felt like such a dunce watching it. I'm like, oh my God, what is that? What is that? I didn't even like understand the link from like the link from the items to the monsters, and I had to look all that stuff up. So I just, yeah, I don't know. I, when you asked how could we survive, I just, the whole time I was thinking, like, I wouldn't. I don't even, yeah, I don't know. This is me being a pal and watching a horror movie in my spare time, but I just felt so scared and horrified. And turns out I had seen it before. I just pulled my mom that I always make fun of her. But yeah, I just, in rewatching it, I was just re-scared. And every single scene, like the dolls, terrifying, and everything was moving so fast. Like, you know, those sped up freaky TikTok videos where clearly it's filmed at a different
speed,
all those things that were moving weird, glitchy fast. It just was like, yeah, I'd use the bathroom the whole time, basically.
Yeah. This movie experience, a lot of the Easter eggs are like geared towards people who watch a lot of horror movies.
Yeah.
So if you watch a lot of horror movies, you'd be like, oh, yeah, I know clearly what that is. Like, I was probably in the same boat as you, Irina. Like, I didn't know a lot of the Easter eggs or, like, obviously the obvious ones. Like, I remember, this is my second time watching this, but I remember the conch, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's for the merman. But I don't remember noticing it the first time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, because they picked up quite a few different ones the first
I didn't realize time. Joss Whedon did this.
Yeah.
Well, he helped write it and he helped produce it.
Yeah. I was like, oh, this will be chill.
I think they said he was going to direct it too, but then he let the other writer direct. Yeah. Drew Goddard.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. And so, I didn't know it was filmed in Vancouver, but I remember getting those vibes the first time I watched it. I was like, this feels like when we go camping.
Yes.
Oh my God, don't say that.
Like, highway.
We're going camping like in 2 weeks.
I know. Well, and then I got obsessed, like, before even getting to the monsters, I was really taking my time with the first, like, section of the movie, and I kind of started reading up about it, and, like, the whole thing, obviously, when you're, like, reading the Wikipedia and stuff is, like, oh, man, this has, like, grade 12, like, lit story vibes, where you're, like, ah, there's a lesson about humanity here, and I'm annoyed about it, but actually, yeah, I wasn't even mad. Like, I kind of, in reading it beforehand, that did help. Mm-hmm. But I did read, I wrote it down. I read a line that was like, they described it as an attempt to revitalize the slasher film genre and as a critical satire on torture porn. And indeed, kind of like, I don't know, when they were bedding at the lab, it kind of reminded me of like Reddit comments and how trippy it feels when people are commenting so casually on this like horrific stuff. And so when, by the time it got to the end, yeah, I actually didn't feel as scared as the first time or even as when it started. And I was just kind of like, yeah, whatever, let humanity go. I was like almost team monsters at the end.
I was actually thinking, because it's more, it gives you more of a clinical view of the whole thing versus, because I think the first time I read it, the first time I saw it, I had no idea what it was about. And I remember not really liking it the first time, mainly because I didn't really get it. So I think yeah, we were quite, because this came out in 2012. I guess we weren't that young. We were in college.
I think they made it in 2010, and then it didn't get picked up until 2011 or something or later. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, okay, yeah, so it was done earlier, yeah. But I remember not liking it as much until I read about it afterwards. And then I was like, oh, now I get, like, the cleverness that's in it, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it does sound very Joss Whedon, now that we know all the crap about him. But, like, when you rewatch it, there's a bit of, like, a self-congratulatory air to the whole thing. Like, look how clever we are. Like, there's a little bit of that vibe that I get watching it like a second or a third time or fourth in this case. But there is, like, now that I know, kind of, you know, it's kind of that hindsight thing now that I know what Joss Whedon really was like, I can kind of hear that in the story, right? Is that he's making a lot of these, like, one of the only real life, I guess, monsters is the KKK. I don't know if you noticed,
they're there.
I'm like, okay, that's kind of clever, but then at the same time he also includes the Huron as like the scalping Indian stereotype. So I think, you know, he does have some really clever commentary in the monsters that he chooses and stuff, but I think overall there's that whole like existentialist kind of look how clever I am.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's like a very Joss Whedon vibe in the whole story.
I think too, like, because it came out in 2011, like, it kind of almost received some like culty love, right? Like, mm-hmm. it feels really well respected and all that stuff. And watching it only recently, for the first time and then last night for the second, I think it kind of feels a little bit overrated, right? Like, I don't know, just with how much love you hear mm-hmm. about it and how respected it is in the horror world, I guess. I mean, not that I'm...
I think it like wasn't well received.
Oh, really?
Was it released when it first came out? Like, was it popular right away? No, I think it became a cult favorite. Yeah.
I think since
it
then,
it got, like, a re-release after... Like, they hung on to it for a little bit, and they re-released it when, like, the main character, like, Chris Hemsworth got picked up for Thor. And they're like, oh, we're going to have, like, a semi-A-list. They didn't know how well Thor was going to do. So then that's kind of, they rode that buzz a little bit.
Mm.
Yeah.
I know, like, it has gotten a ton of love online since. And I think, too, Thomas hyped me up. So I was like, oh, man, this is, okay, apparently this is really one of the top tier horror movies. And, you know, by the end, I'm like, oh, this is just spooky things.
Yeah. I mean, it's clever in, you know, obviously in ways that we haven't really seen them do it. But, yeah. I don't know. I do still think it's clever for a horror movie, but at the same time, it's almost just like any other horror movie. It's just the monster is a different monster than we expected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was really nice.
Oh, sorry.
It was really nice to have it kind of pull you out of the scary zombie in the woods moment into like the lab moment too. Mm-hmm. I found that like actually quite fun. I mean, I'm sure that's been said before.
No, I enjoyed the lab portions. They're just like so unique and weird, and you were kind of confused, like, oh, what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially the what do you guys think of the opening credit?
Oh, when they're in the office.
Yeah,
and they're just like at a vending machine getting like old coffee.
I do hate that jump scare with the title because it gets me every time, and I know it's coming.
That was kind of cool. I thought it was like old timey, kind of like a, like you're going to this, you know, like old school movie theater.
Yeah, it's very 80s slasher film style title.
That's the vibe that I got when I saw the front title, and I was like, oh, that's kind of clever.
Yeah,
sorry, like my brain has been pulled into this conversation about you and your wife trying for a kid, and suddenly somebody is screaming out of nowhere.
Yes.
Yeah, it's quite enjoyable.
Yeah. I think the director and, you know, Joss Whedon wanted it to be like that. They're like, oh, you know, we want the audience to think that they're in the wrong movie. Oh, we signed up for a horror film. Like, what is this?
This sort, like, weird office movie.
Yeah. So apparently that's the thing that they were going for.
Yeah.
That's right. So obviously distracting and confusing.
Yeah. I think what kind of parallel I made with that is the whole idea of, I don't know, this might be getting a little too scholarly, but with Hannah Arendt, she wrote The Banality of Evil. So she was a witness at the Nuremberg trials, right? She was a writer. And she would say, like, these people that are being put on trial, they just seem like any old office worker, just writing down numbers and pushing papers through. But between them all, they've killed millions of people, right? So that's kind of what that made me feel like, is that, yeah, so many people do terrible things in the name of, this is just my job, mm-hmm. right? So I think he was trying to set that up in the sense that, like, yeah, they're talking about mundane, you know, I don't know, baby-proofing cabinets and stuff, but their whole job is to ensure that people get killed every single year in terrible ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, I found that the intern character was really good for that. Like the guy that they mm-hmm. had to explain things to every so often, mm-hmm. where, you know, the younger woman who was working with the two kind of senior guys, clearly, she almost had this apologetic, like, well, we always, like, I think when she handed over her money for the bedding, she was almost like bashful about it in front of him. Like, I felt that that character was super helpful in, like, making those connections for me. Like, I thought of Milgram's shock experiments and, yeah, like, speaking of my profession, the lottery. Like, the one where it's just, well, that's just tradition. We stone one person a year and no questions asked and don't ask questions. And if you do, you're a threat, whatever. So, it felt very, like, it felt very much like reading an English 12 story and then having kids make those connections, because it just, I guess it does have a layer of slightly more profound in that way. And those office scenes, Fazila, like, to answer your question, I think that's what helped do that, is like, well, these people have to die anyway, so we may as well have some fun, place your bets. And, you know, I don't know.
No, that was really good. That was a good
Who connection. Would you guys have bet on?
Yeah, for them picking it up, I think.
I think you have to look at what's the most interesting objects.
Like, all of them grabbed something, and they were all about to do it. Like, if they had a couple more minutes with it before she started reading out of the diary, got their attention. I think any one of them could have been it. Like, the blonde girl, Jules. I think.
Yeah, she had the bride.
She was about to put on the bride's necklace.
Mm-hmm.
And then Marty was about to look through the film. I think if he looks through the negatives, and that would have started it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. So I lost my mind when I saw the whiteboard. I had to pause it because, you know, you have werewolf, alien beast, like the merman, which that was a nice callback later when the guy gets...
Yeah.
But, you know, the doctor, zombie redneck torture. And then when I saw Kevin on the board, I was like, what even is Kevin? And so I think... when I looked it up, Kevin is connected to the film.
Yeah.
Like the film strip.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know. I think too, like, I'm a little bit too practical with this type of thing. Horror movies and that kind of thing, these games, but how some of the monsters are human was really trippy to me. I'm like, who's Kevin? Like, is he, can we look at the ethics of using Kevin as a monster? And so, anyhow, I looked it up and this was the picture. I'll just show you guys. It's this like creepy shadowy thing with,
It's Elijah Wood's character from Sin City.
Oh.
Yeah, so he's like a serial killer that, like, he's like a regular guy, or seems like a regular guy, and he murders people. And I think ripped their skin off for these people. I can't remember. But I can't remember now.
I mean, I knew none of that and I completely missed it. So that's helpful. But it just, to me, like, next to dismemberment goblins, seeing Kevin,
says nothing. No one voted for Kevin. It's like,
I know, that was such a, I know. And I think too, like, later then thinking about that scene, I'm like, I wish the film strip had been picked, because then that would have been a whole other thing with nobody winning. But anyhow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's definitely some funny ones in there. Sexy witches always gets me.
The freaking unicorn.
Yeah, the unicorn is so violent.
Well, and I mean, while we're doing these kind of tropes and these cliches, I was thinking, like, maybe I could survive, you know, because just I kept coming back to your question. I was like, maybe I could survive the unicorn if I, like, match made the unicorn with one of the creepy little children. Like, little girls like unicorns. Maybe we can set them up and have them go off riding into away from me. So that
tag
was
them together. Yeah.
That was
so before, like, we pick our monsters, I kind of want to think about, you know, how the movie sort of had five types of characters. So they had someone who was the jock type, the fool, the intellectual, the virgin, and the whore. So they were saying like there's five types of people usually in a grouping, and they get killed based on like their category. And then do you remember like the monolith had the carving of like the people, and anytime someone died, they would do a blood sacrifice for that person.
Yeah, sorry, quick pause. Where did they get that blood from? That was another technicality I got really hung up on. I'm like, did they
I
take
think
the
it
blood earlier
I, no, I think it was like probably like their blood being spilled, collected in a vat of some sort, and then it didn't really show it, but that's what I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think
Yeah, I
it's
think
supposed to be their blood, but like, yeah, the amount that they've got obviously doesn't
I
translate to
was
being
like,
able to
did
fill
they
up
do
that.
some
It's a
blood
lot of
work?
blood.
Like, did they go to life labs and like swing something? Like, I just felt
Maybe
so
they collected it
obsessed.
beforehand, like when they were, I don't know, drug them or something.
Yeah, they
I don't
did
know.
a
I
blood
like,
transfusion,
I
reverse
think this
blood
is
transfusion.
my coping mechanism too. When I feel scared, I'm just like, well, let's
This
think about
seems
this stupid
unrealistic.
detail that doesn't matter.
If we can make it logical, it's not as scary, right?
Exactly. Sorry, but what were you gonna ask,
So, like,
Adila?
which type of character would you choose to want to be, and then how would that influence the monster you chose? Because, like, Jules, she was really smart. She was in pre-med. Like, she was a brunette before, and they put something in her hair dye, so it was like seeping into her brain, making her dumber, and kind of having like the blonde effect. But she was labeled the whore, and she ended up dying first. And they're like, "Yes, that one dies first."
Yeah. I think it's, I don't
So,
think you even have a choice, right? Because it sounds like they've been prepping them for quite a while for
yeah,
the
I guess
roles that
they're
they
right.
want them to fit, right? Because none of them really fit into the roles that they have.
No, they pushed them in there.
Yeah, it's mostly due to the chemicals and the manipulation before they even get to the cabin. Because the one who's supposed to be the scholar, Holden, right? He actually like is shown as being an athlete too in the beginning, right?
That's right.
So it's kind of like, I don't know if I would have a choice in what role I get, because it seemed like they just did whatever they wanted. Because Jules, like you said, is pre-med, so she could have easily been the scholar too, but they decided to make her into the whore.
I mean, I feel like my instinctive response to your question was the stoner guy, because, like, first of all, I resent the cliche, and second of all, it felt very like, as far as their planning goes, Sophia, it was very much like clearly they didn't consider that his weed made him immune to the pheromones and all the stuff they were spraying or whatever. So, actually, I found him to be like quite bright and pretty like level-headed the whole time. And yeah, I feel like he was not very fitting of the fool kind of structure, I guess. And so all of it, I think that kind of dominoed for me. It made all of them, you're right, feel quite sloppy in their choices. But yeah, I would clearly, I mean, I would definitely be him, because it just felt like he was the most sane and the least distracted, and
Considering he's
honestly,
like the stoner.
Oh, and a
yeah.
fun fact about that character, his name was Fran Kranz, and he was actually really jacked under all those clothes.
Oh,
Oh,
really?
I read the same thing. Yeah. That's why he didn't go swimming or something.
Yeah, he like didn't go swimming or like never take his shirt off or like anything, because all the characters at some point were removing their clothing. He did not.
Don't mind me just looking him up.
Yeah, look him up, totally.
I definitely did as well when I read that.
I think he was doing a film or something at that time, at the same time, so they kind of overlapped. So they put him in super baggy clothes. But I'm like, who says that if you're like a stoner and slacker that you can't have a hot bod?
Well, it ruins our idea. So wait, is that cat like is that choice also a view on society?
Yeah, they're pushing it that if you're a slacker, you don't have a hot body.
Yeah, it's so meta.
Like, exposes abs. We were all waiting for
Maybe
it.
we're in the movie right now.
I can't tell if you guys are reaching too deep or if you're really hovering at the top here with this.
Okay, wait.
Yeah,
If we get
oh,
back to your
interesting too.
question, I don't know. I feel like the role that would obviously fit me if someone was trying to observe me and like mold me would either be the scholar or the virgin character, because that would just be the easiest one that I would fall into, either of those. But
Yeah.
neither, I mean, I guess the virgin is supposed to survive or not at the end, and
She's
the
supposed to
scholar kind of
suffer the
dies in a
most.
very undramatic way.
You're supposed to dramatically suffer. It's
Yeah,
funny
which I don't
because
enjoy, so I think I'd rather be the scholar. If I needed to die, I'd rather die sooner.
Yeah, my instinct in this world is just to then pick the whore character because, like, I don't even like tag. I don't like archery tag. I don't like laser tag. I never liked it as a child. Like, I hate being chased.
Yeah.
I always think, like, if it ever was some sort of apocalyptic scenario, like, my instinct is to just end it and, like, not see the terrors. Like, I'm just such a wuss. And so, yeah, it feels, like, almost ideal to not suffer at all if it's gonna go down anyway.
You're the leave one bullet in the gun for yourself person.
Yeah, and as dark as that is, like at one point they showed, you know, when they had all the glitchy kind of CCTV footage of people and their reactions and the monsters jumping on them and stuff, they showed a woman shooting herself and I was like, girl, honestly, like, good call. I just, you're hearing the screams, you're like hearing tentacles and like watching the creepy, like fast TikTok style moves of the ceiling crawler, the Risen or whatever the hell that one was. But anyhow, you know, you're seeing that stuff, like just end it. And I felt like I could relate the most to that. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, and I guess to come back to the original thing, like in kind of analyzing the monsters, like, just all of them, like, I feel like I saw Sigourney Weaver and I was like, hell yeah, I'll take her maximum. Like, the mist thing, nah. The fast cobra that was just swooping in massive. The creepy white mask family.
Oh, I hate that. That would have been the dolls, just, I think. That I think they were connected to the dolls.
That was so creepy.
Just no
thanks. Or the doctors, like, doing the vivisection. Oh, that's the worst way to die.
Yeah. There was a weird, like, saw machine thing, too. Sorry, I didn't write down the names.
But I think it's the killer robot.
Yeah, hold on. I think I bookmarked it. That was the scariest one. It was just, like...
Oh, it was so like fast. It was just,
the clowns, though. Like, that clown bolting down the stairs,
murdering people. It was crazy.
Yeah, the buzzsaw thing. So
I think that was supposed to be killer robot.
Right. I think, like... I have just like this very human like fear of surgery and like cutting and that kind of thing. And so I saw that. I was like, ugh, this is terrible. I think like having it all come out at once. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, Sigourney Weaver at most. I don't know.
I feel like that was it. I think I looked it up and she was literally called American Slowly Walking Creepy Girl or something. The one in the hallway when they're running away and like she starts walking and singing a lullaby to like an injured guard that's trying to crawl away, but she walks like super slow and that's her whole thing. I'm like, I could probably take that on.
I mean, and the zombies too, like I think they don't run, so you just find
but they're very quiet for what they do. They manage to sneak up on them a lot.
Yeah, I
know. Okay, it's really hard to pick like what monster I would choose. I definitely have some that are on my no list, and zombies are one of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know.
The not being able to die thing, maybe.
Yeah, and like then you have to like still come back, and you're a zombie, and you die very, very slowly by getting eaten. So you're like alive for the entire time. Like I just can't with that.
I just think of. I think it was Ivan Decker, the comedian, who was talking about zombies having human teeth and how the solution would just be to like wear leather, instead of like freaking out in a tank top and running around.
Yeah.
Like
that's a good point. I never thought of that.
Yeah. That talking really about how fickle they are with like toasted sandwiches, even like, oh, it's too crunchy. And I won't try to recreate it, but I just anytime I see zombies now, I just get such a kick out of thinking like, ah, they were people. So they're kind of slow versions of people with like shitty human teeth. So, I mean,
that's what there's many of them. And they like overpower you with like the masses. It's not like
that's true.
One, I assume that's why the movie went with them, right? Because just one monster wouldn't be nearly as effective.
Right. And I think like one of the zombie guys that they had activated was swinging around that like bear trap. Oh, that's looking the
father Buckner.
Right. Yes. No, thank you to that. But otherwise I felt like, zombies.
Oh, the bear trap. Yeah, that's what he had. I can't even imagine how you're supposed to survive that, because Jules got it the first, but then so did Holden, right? Because he gets lifted by it. Like, how would you even walk after that? Like, it goes right into you.
No, no coming back. You're like,
I was a bit unclear as to how Marty survived at all, because the zombie pulled him. Like, it just felt like he definitely died, and then it didn't really make sense that he wasn't dead.
I think he just mentioned that he wrestled. I think he took the, because the zombie had a shovel, I think, and I think he mentioned that he had to dismember him with the shovel. So I assume at some point they were able to fight a little bit, and he got hold of the shovel and managed to dismember.
I just had like an out-of-body experience listening to you explain dismemberment with a shovel, where it's like one of those, like, what are we?
Oh my God.
Starts with the joints. I did like his
I liked his endearing response when he explained to Dana, oh, so I've just been dismembering this thing. What have you been up to?
Oh, yeah.
Like, that felt like, that kind of brought it back to the comedy genre a little bit. But yeah, amidst all the dismembering.
There are some really good funny parts. My favorite is when the zombie arm slowly crawls back to strangle the dead guard.
Oh, yeah. God. In the elevator, yes.
Yeah, yeah. That part always makes me laugh when I see it.
The slasher stuff, I think, too. Like, if you watch, I know, Sophia, you watch definitely more than me, but I think if you are familiar with some of those kind of running gags and cliches and that kind of thing, like I think you appreciate it more. Like, because I was like, oh, I get the nods, kind of.
Yeah.
More from like parodies, like Scary Movie and that kind of thing than anything else. But yeah, it just doesn't make you into a fan. Whereas I think if you've already experienced and enjoyed some of that, you do get more of a kick out of it.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Yeah. That's a good point about Scary Movie. This is like a serious version of Scary Movie. Doing kind of the same thing, but trying to be serious about it.
I mean, I think, like, it's funny, because when you think about fear, I think the stuff that, like, really scares me, the only thing that's managed to, like, really mess me up and make me, like, think about it for a long time is, like, kind of Black Mirror stuff, like, brain stuff. I sometimes, Sophia, you might relate, but sometimes when I'm teaching a class, I just get this, like, weird moment where I'm like, what if I'm not? Like, what if I'm just... my meds are off and I'm old and I'm standing somewhere else talking to like a wall or a mirror. And yeah, I think like that kind of like memory or consciousness or brain stuff really messes me up the most. And so yeah, like that kind of Black Mirror thing, or like the psychological thriller more than the slasher stuff. So I think like, yeah, it's interesting when you look at fear. Like, I don't think many people's real fears, other than when you're like running out of a basement quickly, is getting whacked with a bear claw, like bear trap on a chain thing. I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. I maybe personalize that too much, but it just feels like when dealing with fear, this just felt so removed from my real fears that it was almost kind of fun. It's like Tom and I have been watching The Sopranos a lot, and in a world that's like utterly burning and that is terrifying, and where, you know, you can analyze humanity and hurt, it feels really fun to watch someone owe someone else money and to like feel like that's drama. And
like, so such a little problem.
So as far as like real fear goes, like this actually felt like a bit of an escape, especially as somebody who doesn't really watch a ton of horror movies. So
I think that's kind of the point of horror movies, right? Is that you never want to see that stuff happen to yourself, but it's kind of fun watching it happen to other people.
Disagree.
Which is like, I mean, that's why they're so popular, right? I think maybe that's part of the commentary is, you know, why do we enjoy that stuff so much? Like, why is there such a huge market for watching people get murdered and tortured on screen? It's a kind of escape, right? Like, what does that say about us, I guess, on an animalistic level, that we enjoy that sort of thing?
For sure. And I think that's why, like, apocalypse stuff does do so well. Like, to think of a no rules, like, gun in everyone's hands, free for all, like, it's not only cathartic, I think it does a lot more. Like, it's, yeah, you're right. It almost plays into, like, a fantasy of, yeah, I don't know. I think you're totally right. Like, I didn't mean to dismiss that so much earlier. But
I think what I'm hearing is that you would like a long, slow, torturous death.
Yeah, maybe the opposite, actually.
So your like, monster would be like a therapist, basically, but like an awful therapist.
Yeah,
making you doubt yourself more and more, and then you
just
die.
I would just like spiral. Exactly. I don't think I'd be very fun to watch in a horror movie.
You're like, why are you doing this? No, really, why? Explain.
Yeah, it's kind of funny too. Like, hey, don't be that guy. It's kind of funny too. Like, I don't think I scream when scary things happen. I've gone really silent on roller coasters before. Like, when I think I'll scream, I just kind of go really quiet. And I think often I might have told this story before to you guys, but there was a moment when I got really spooked, like genuinely thought it might be like a man in my house trying to kill me when I was like 12 or 13. And the family dog was sleeping kind of behind where I had turned, and it was late at night. And he made a sound kind of like a human man. I guess I startled him, and he was just like, he made like a human sound. And I released like the weirdest, the strangest noise came out of me. And it wasn't a scream. It was just this like odd grunt. And I won't try and recreate it now, but I just thought like, man, that would have been a terrible scene in a horror movie. It would have been very kind of accidentally comedic and not cinematic at all. So I don't know. I think if we're originally kind of coming back to that, like if we're going to place ourselves in this movie, I don't think I'd be a very good watch.
That would be funny if they did like a different movie, just following people doing. I think it was kind of cool when you could see the other countries going through their rituals. I think that could have made for a fun kind of prequel, is looking at maybe like a previous year or something, and seeing what other, like being able to flip between all the different monsters and all the stuff that's going on. Because it looks like it's supposed to all happen all the same time.
How have they not done more movies? Like, you're right. How have there not been sequels and offshoots?
I don't know. I kind of read about it a little bit. Well, I mean, now with the whole Joss Whedon thing, I don't think it's ever going to happen. But I think they said because the ending is supposed to be it's the end of the world, they wouldn't know how to follow it up with like talking about the ancient ones. But I think a prequel would have worked in this sense.
Totally.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of the scene? I think it was in Kyoto, of the like little sweet Japanese girls being like little muffins in their classroom and having the scary monster defeated. Like, that just felt like such a jarring exit from what was going on in our story.
I thought it was pretty cute. They were able to like get together and defeat the, I think it's supposed to be the ring, the girl from the ring.
Oh, okay.
The Japanese version.
The thing I don't get is like, why turn her into a frog?
It was just like silly and cute and like a kind of nonsensical release.
And the reaction from, I can't remember his name right now, but from the guy just like screaming fuck you at all the 9-year-olds, and I'm like, that's kind of there's a bit of hilarity in there too.
He was so mad at them.
But why are they allowed to fail? Like, is that part of the clause, I wonder, that it has to be genuine enough that they should have the chance to be able to, I mean, fail or succeed, depending on what you're looking at. Because it seems like I think for this one, right, every other country had failed to kill everybody. And so it was only the Americans left. But that's kind of an interesting, I guess it has to be there, or else it really wouldn't make for any kind of stakes situation. See, like that, I think, would have been made for an interesting prequel, is looking at all the nitty gritty details. But I guess maybe that's difficult because, I mean, it's not like a real world thing. So I think making a whole movie out of that might take the fun out of it. But
can I ask you guys, like, would you have shot a friend to save humanity in Dana's position? Like, I kind of, when Thomas did pop in for that, I was like, dude, I'd kill you if it meant saving Louisa. Like,
no question.
Don't they have other loved ones? You know what I mean? Like, it just felt like such a weird, selfish move to give up. And then I think that is obviously the bigger commentary, is that humanity isn't worth saving and all that stuff. But just in that moment, like when she had the gun up to him, I was like, do it.
I think my fear would be that if I did it, and then it's like, it actually didn't mean anything. Do you know what I mean? Then you find like, oh, you didn't need to. We just wanted to see if you would. Like, that would be, because I just don't trust anybody, right? So in that situation, I wouldn't trust what they were telling me, considering all the crap that I had just learned. Like, I don't think I would necessarily believe that it really is the end of the world.
Okay, but Sophia, if you knew for sure that you had to kill me to save the world, would you not do it?
But see, I'm kind of the mind that, especially with everything going on, I'm like, you know, humanity's had its run. Like, I don't really mind if we all go. It's like saying, you know, everyone else dies and I'm the only one that survives. Like, I'm more than happy to go with everybody else too. So I feel like that's a fair kind of stance.
Thank you for handling that with such grace. What a stupid question.
No. I mean, it is good though. It is one of those, like, what is it? The trolley question, right?
So, well, thank you for saving me. That was very sweet.
It's good.
And then we die together.
Temporarily, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how long I would survive in the horror film cabin in the woods sort of situation. Because I'm afraid. I'm really scared. So I think that my adrenaline would be rushing so much that I would accidentally turn a corner and like kill one of my allies. Like not
Oh,
on
yeah.
purpose, but like as an accident, because you're so amped up. And you know how you're not supposed to split up, but you split up anyways because you're freaking out.
Well, they were made to split up too, right? With the chemicals.
Yeah, at first they're like, let's not split up, and then the guys in the office sort of intervene and then make them split up.
I
Yeah.
mean, I think it's like a normal thing for, moments of high intensity, high stress, high pressure to make stupid decisions. I don't even know that pheromones would be needed for me
Yeah. You would be thinking logically.
to come up with a dumb plan.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the giant cat. Because it's
One
one
of
of the,
the
it might be one of the fan speculations. I have it
quote
circled here in quote unquote early version of the elevator scene where they zoom out and show all the monsters. It says the giant cat is an animalistic monster kept inside the facility. It was not listed on the whiteboard, nor was it seen during the system purge. Like, I don't know. I feel like I'm not a cat person. I have a cat, but I feel like that's one that would be less scary.
It probably just
Like
like
it's a
bat you
giant.
around and play. Like, look how they kill mice, though. That's pretty terrifying.
I don't know. I
And
mean,
it's a
yeah, for
giant
sure.
cat. It's not just like a small
It'll
cat,
like
it's a
put you in its
giant cat.
mouth, like puncture a few holes, spit you out, let you run around again, give you some hope of living, and then try and kill you.
Okay,
You're like
fair.
trying to
That's
run away
true.
and then it like trips you.
It just like claws you back each time. Oh my.
Oh my God.
I
That
just
is
got a flashback.
terrifying.
I got a flashback of Spinelli, our cat, trying to get a moth, and she was not very good at it. The other kind of thought that I had is, when you put like a little piece of, not that I've done this, I have YouTube. When people put like a little piece of tape or something on a cat's back, like it freezes and can't really do much. I just feel like that's one of the ones I would have a chance with, is
Yeah.
just like
Just need a
dealing
giant
with.
piece of tape to get on its
No,
back.
I would like probably try to latch on and I
Like
don't know.
trick it.
Yeah. I don't know.
Listen, like the giant saw that's mechanically quickly coming at my neck, I would rather take the giant cat.
Yeah, I guess so. Paired with that, the giant cat for sure. But I do not want that
Are all the
robot
monsters
killer.
supposed to appear? Like, is the cabin always a cabin, I guess? Like, it sounds like it is, right? So it means any of those monsters, like whatever you pick, could be up in that cabin. Because
I think they
logistically
always,
speaking, like, how
yeah,
would the cat get in?
they always do it there because at one point I think Dana says, I don't think Kurt even has a cousin
Oh,
or had that
right.
cousin or whatever. And
Yeah.
then when they have the they pan to the lab, the guys say, oh, we've had a room switch. So
Yeah.
I think the rooms are like set up in such a way that like it's just like a routine thing for them.
Yeah. Because I was saying, like, the giant cat would have a hard time getting into the room.
No, I think, oh yeah, okay,
Or is it like a
fair enough.
human size? I guess it's like giant. I'm thinking like Clifford, like Clifford size, bigger than the
Hold on, let me.
house. But it could
Well, do you
just be like
remember the
a.
bat?
Do you remember how big the bat
Oh,
was?
yeah, that's true. Yeah, the bat, the
So
dragon.
the
There
cat's
was a
probably
Kraken,
huge.
too.
Yeah.
Whitney,
No,
that's her
inside
name.
the
The
cabin.
chem department girl. Because she gets taken by the Kraken, and that thing's massive.
It also like busted through.
The roof. Oh yeah,
Yeah.
that makes sense.
So
It
like
says the giant cat's like little thing is the cat statue or cat toys, like the item.
yeah.
So I think yeah, the size. Sorry if I
Whatever
missed
fits in
something there. The
there.
size
Yeah.
would not
The amount,
matter
yeah,
in
that's
the
true.
cabin.
I don't know. I don't know what strategy you could use really to survive. I think I would avoid rooms with windows. That's always my like I always hate. That's the one thing I hate about horror movies is when it's something realistic. Like when I was a kid, after I can't remember what movie this was, but I couldn't stand near windows in the dark for the longest time because you're like, you don't know what's out there. Something could just smash through the window at any time. So that's, I think that would probably be my first thing is either just stand in a corner where I can see everything, like Mob Rules, since you're talking about The Sopranos, right? Like you're not
Yeah.
supposed to have, you're supposed to be able to observe all the exits and entrances. So
Well, that's like every single time at a restaurant. I want the spot where I can see the whole restaurant, and I don't know
yeah.
why. I don't know why that's in me. I haven't been through anything. I don't know where that's ingrained from, but yeah, it feels like you do want access. Every scene with Marty in it in the cabin, his back is to a window and he's standing right by it. I
Yeah,
was just
yeah.
like, watching through my fingers, expecting something to just snag them.
Yeah. That would be kind of my first thought, is staying away from a window. But I don't know if that's enough to have me survive the whole thing. Just standing quietly in a corner.
I mean, what about playing dead? Like, I always said, if I'm ever... Not that I would ever be drafted for the army or anything, I think. But, like, I just would not fight for my country. I would play dead immediately. I don't know how much time other soldiers are spending, like, shooting dead bodies. I don't know a lot about war. I don't know a lot about, like, battle. But I just feel like my first move is laying down. Rub somebody else's blood on me if that's what it takes. Like, I don't know how... How good would that work? How well would that work in the facility? Like, I just find a spot to hide, play dead, hope the zombies don't sniff you out. I don't know.
I know, it kind of just depends on how, like, are they aware of whether someone is dead or alive? Because clearly the facility doesn't really know, because they thought Marty was dead the whole time. But the weird thing is, in the beginning, they have, like, heart rate monitors. Or I guess maybe it's only when they're in the cabin they can monitor them. I don't know. But,
I don't know. It's a little flawed for sure.
Yeah. So I don't know. If they can tell that you're not dead, that could put you in a dangerous position because you're just lying there.
I mean, personally, I would be terrible to have on any sort of team. Like, from bocce to zombie apocalypse. Like, I don't know that I would be a team player. I don't know that I would... Yeah, I don't know. I would definitely, like I said, I would just definitely shoot somebody if it meant saving others. Like, I'm impulsive, and I think it just wouldn't serve me well here. even when they would go back for their friends and stuff, I'm like, man, just run. Like, they don't know the barriers there. Just run where you came from and keep running.
I think that's one of those horror movie tropes, right? It's like, oh, they got whoever. And you're like, you don't believe, one of them always doesn't believe it. They're like, no, we must go back for them. And they get killed right away, right? Which is what Dana basically tried to do by opening the door again when Kurt said Jules was gone. Yeah.
She didn't believe him about Jules. He's like, why would he, like, lie? I guess, like, also...
That's the thing, where, like, this dude is covered in blood. He's, like, a big, huge athlete. He's telling you, like, he's terrified and not to open the door. And your first thought is, no, I'm this tiny girl, so I'm going to go open the door.
I can take them.
I mean, listen, sometimes I'm like, where's the remote? And Thomas says it's not here. And I make him get up anyway.
Like, yeah, but the remote is different. All trust is lost.
I just feel like, I would, if we're talking zombies are outside, I got to see it. Like, I don't know. They don't feel real until they're real, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I would believe him. I'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, you look like you're in such distress. I totally believe whatever you say.
You're right. The smudged blood is definitely, like, an unsettling and important.
Like, even if it was a prank, that would be, like, a friendship-ending prank. Like, I would not talk to them ever again.
Oh, yeah. You're, also, like, walking home.
Yeah, pranks are dumb. It's been said before. I'll say it again. Pranks are dumb. Don't prank me. I won't react how you expect. It'll just be friendship-ending.
Yeah, really, it'll be so bad.
It's just, it's a little psychopathic. It's like watching a horror movie. It satisfies this, like, sociopathic part of every human. Just different scales, I guess. It's, you can watch a horror movie, or you can pull off some really terrible prank on people for YouTube likes. No. People die from pranks. I was reading a bunch of, there was some TikTok one, I think, a few months ago, and I don't know. That's not how I would want my obituary to go.
I actually feel worse when I see those videos of people doing kind things on record, I guess.
Yeah. Like,
filming them giving cash to someone in need or whatever. Like, it just, that makes me feel ickier than a prank.
Oh,
a prank does feel, like, more honest. Where it's like, we're going to capture on video this silly thing and your silly reaction. But, I get into more of that, like, Marty mode of, like, end it all when I see that kind of stuff.
I agree. It's like the whole, like, what is it? Voluntourism. I always talk to students and say, take a gap year if you want, but don't ever do any of those. Like, I don't know. I'm surprised I haven't gotten in trouble because it is quite a big thing in certain communities to do the sort of, you know, 1 year voluntourism in some poor nation that you can take pictures with
the sad children. The follow-up is, like, do not post any picture of you doing this quote-unquote volunteer work for this made-up program that doesn't really help on your Tinder. Like, if you're going to go and take a picture of you quote unquote helping and then use it later for it just feels like the same level of ickiness.
It's pretty gross. So I usually tell students, I'm like, you know, do travel and, you know, travel the world, do whatever, you know, do whatever you need to learn more about other people, but that's not the way to go about it.
Yeah. And I think too, like, not to take it too far away from like slasher flicks and ironic commentary on torture porn, but so not to take it too far away, I think it kind of, all that stuff comes back to like white saviorism and some of the like deeper issues rooted in our society. And it's so it's yucky, all of it.
I mean, even this one, right, they make a point of saying all the other dumb countries failed and it's up to the Americans to save the world again, but you know, they fail, which is I guess the part that they weren't supposed to do.
It's nice. Like, it feels good to see that type of failure, I guess. Like, it's cathartic. Yeah. I think, too, like, I remember having a really visceral response when I watched Inglourious Basterds years ago. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what this rewriting history thing, like, I think, too, like, I don't know. I'm going to ramble here, and I hope I don't. But I think it comes back to an issue of, like, what if your first and only exposure to issues around, I don't know, slavery or the Holocaust or whatever, is like a film like that. And it's just, you know, you don't look much further into it, or you're young, or you watch it with your buddies. Like, I think there's like, I think bastardizing and hurting history in that way can't do good, but it is such a release. Like, it feels so good. It's nice to watch things fail that didn't fail. Like, it's just kind of like such an experience. And I think like that's what obviously draws people to escapism and films and games and all that stuff. But I think it's, I think it could be dangerous too. And
I think the only redeeming, I mean, not the only, but the redeeming part of the way Inglourious Basterds did it was that it was just so exaggerated that I don't think anyone watching that movie would have been like, oh, this is a historical representation. But there are times when there is revisionist stuff that is close enough that if you didn't question any further, you would believe that that's what it was, right? That's I think I have a bigger problem.
Quentin Tarantino obviously is out there, but I just think I don't know, I feel like 79 years old, and like I just feel like I've lost faith in
sense
people.
Of humor.
And I don't know that I give that much credit to people knowing. I'm sure like I'm at fault too. Like, there's stuff that I completely internalized that I later find out is wrong and I have to fix. But
that is the thing though, so if the premise, like, they find out later on, old Jules and Marty find out that this all relates to the end of humanity, like, wouldn't it be interesting, are they allowed, like, I don't know, I just think like in a different world, if this was a real life situation, if you just told everybody that this was the case and you show them evidence from previous years or something, like, would people just gladly die in order so that they can save humanity? Because I don't think they would. I think they would do the same thing and just say, whatever, screw humanity. If I can't live, screw everybody else. Because I feel like that's a lot of our current attitude right now is, if it doesn't affect me, I don't care, or I don't care until it affects me, right? So I think it could be an interesting kind of question to pose to a group of people like that and just say, look, this is the case. You've all got to die in some kind of order to save all of humanity. Like, I think they would have a hard time, like, finding a group of people to do it.
I read a story for the first time this year, and it messed me up. And then I made my students read it as well. So, you know, 30-second version of it is, so it's written in 1973. It's by Ursula Le Guin, and it's called The Ones Who Walk Away from Omelas. I'm not sure if you've read it. Sophia, have you read it or taught it?
No, I know the author, but I've never read it.
I can't believe I had never encountered it before. I just kind of casually picked it up. A friend recommended it, and the premise is, it's like 4 pages long. The first 3 pages are describing this like absolute utopia. Like, the economy is thriving, nature is wonderful, everyone's healthy. There's a scene in a farmer's market fair type vibe where, you know, it starts and everything's lovely and everyone's happy. And so the first 3 pages are describing this utopia. And in the fourth page, you realize that it exposes this like weird, shoddy closet where this child is locked, maybe 10 or 11 years old. And though they look much younger and they've been neglected. And I think it refers to it as it the whole time. It sits in its own feces and is like stinky, and it doesn't even cry anymore. It just whimpers because of how long it's been there. And It's this like really horrific scene. I think too, I just kept thinking of Louisa and just how neglected children are the saddest possible thing in the world. But it doesn't matter who you are, where you've come from, what your setup is. Like, it's such a jarring and horrific scene, and it feels like the most horror movie thing that I had encountered in a long time, and it really messed me up. And the city is called Omelas, and so I guess what happens is everybody who lives in that utopia sees and has access to that child, and at some point has to see that child. And the understanding is that in order for this utopia to exist, that child also has to exist. And so there are people who stay, who see that that's what it is. And, you know, it has to be, someone has to suffer. And I'm not a terrible person for wanting my kids to be healthy and for understanding that everybody else gets to thrive, and so be it. And then there are those who walk away. And then, like, I think people speculate, like, do they walk away? What does that mean? Is that suicide? Is that, like, do they leave and find something that could be potentially darker, but, you know, they just refuse to stay with the status quo and all that stuff. And it just kind of ends, and it's quick, and it's kind of like a kind of a quick and dirty read. And I couldn't stop spiraling. Just like, I was thinking about fast fashion. I was thinking about where the parts of my cell phone come from. I was thinking about obviously all the vaccine stuff and climate change and all. I just started spiraling, and it was late at night that I read it, and I couldn't stop thinking about it. And I had my students look up kind of what's our version of that child that's locked in the closet. And all of us, like, it's a horror movie. Like, I couldn't, to what you were saying now, Sophia, and just kind of latching onto that, that's what I thought of, and that's what I've continued to think about, is like, there are those that are suffering. Like, if you exposed and showed to everybody, if you showed to all of humanity, here are the monsters that exist, and here are the ways in which people suffer in order for you to keep living, like, would people stay? Mm-hmm. And it just, in rewatching that, I couldn't shake that story. And I guess, like, how classic of an idea it is, mm-hmm. that we choose our own comfort and our own backyard over, like, some sort of peace in utopia or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah. I don't think it exists. And so I think that's just what part of being human is. And I think, too, in a way, like, that's why this type of movie is fun. And that's why it is good. And that's why at the end, when she doesn't shoot Marty after all, you do get kind of a relief. Like, they smoke a joint and then the monsters come and that's that, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's just kind of this, like, satisfying, like, we messed up and there we go.
Yeah. I think that was kind of the original... Or I read it somewhere when I first watched the movie that was kind of the ancient ones is actually supposed to represent the audience who always wants, like, more, right? Like, we always want, mm-hmm. the more we watch, the more we become desensitized. So the crazier things we want to see, you know, so it's kind of that idea of consumption, I guess, consumerism and overconsumption and desensitization to all this kind of stuff. So it kind of makes sense if, you know, the whole movie is an allegory for the way humans demand more and more and more, no matter what it is. Like, whether it's to watch the next scariest horror movie in the world, we always expect people to do more for us, to entertain us. So I think it is very similar.
That's what the news has become as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, death counts on CNN and, like, blood red letters at the top. And the
yeah, like, you know, it's kind of crazy. Like, I can't imagine... like 15, 20 years ago showing, you know, someone dying on the news and it just becoming this weird soundbite. So it is, I think it's very similar to, like, sort of the whole Cabin in the Woods idea of, like, we just get thirstier and thirstier for worse and worse things, to the point where, like, at what point do we need to stop and just say, like, what does even being human mean anymore, when we can all take in so much of this and be totally okay with it?
I remember binging Game of Thrones a few winters ago. We just plowed through the entire thing, all 7 seasons before the 8th one came out. And my friend Anna was over and she was visiting, and we had, I don't know why, Pulp Fiction was on in the background, and we were just chatting and it was just on and it was no big deal. And obviously it's, like, horrifically gory and violent and brutal. And because I had been watching so much Game of Thrones, I remember there's a scene we just kind of stopped our conversation and both zoned into. And it was the one with the hamburgers, and they had come to the apartment, Jules and whatever, and they shot those kids up. And It ended, and there was like this big sigh from Anna, and she's like, my God, I forgot how terrible this was. And because I had been watching so much Game of Thrones, I was truly and deeply desensitized. And I remember just thinking as it was happening before she said that, like, oh my God, this is not as bad as I remembered. Like, this is no big deal. So you're totally right. Like, there's just this, like, you know, I think someone swooping in and listening to this, not having watched the movie, you know, we're talking about these things that are like horrific, but it just felt like so no big deal.
Yeah, I think like
the more it goes on, you're like, yeah, I can take that. Yeah. I ask my students, like when we do talk about media and tragedy and that kind of thing, I take a poll real quick and, you know, who's seen a death, like whether it's online or in the news or on a social media stream or whatever, like have you seen a person lose their life, like visually, just on a anywhere, like in either real time or recorded or whatever, and like 100% of them put their hands up.
Oh God.
Yeah, I don't That's know disturbing. That I have, like,
because I really make a point not to watch those clips.
Yeah, and I think sometimes you're right, it's unavoidable, like it's
that's the thing, right? Like, as terrible as it sounds, like real death is not as dramatic as it is in the movies. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, and that's why it feels like just a completely different thing. Like, you could have a family member dying of whatever, and a horror movie just feels like a completely separate entity.
Yeah, it's not... yeah. Because it's just so... But you don't even realize, right? Like, watching someone... I don't even want to get too into this without sounding like it's too grossed out. But, like, I don't know. Like, the, you know, strangling people in movies, they show that completely, right? Like, not that I've ever seen anyone in real life being strangled, but I feel like... I don't think it actually takes as much time as it does that they show in movies, right? In movies, always is like long, drawn out sequence. But I think sometimes they say it actually doesn't take that much time, or the opposite is it takes way more than you think. So I'm like, there's just like, it's not something that I ever want to know and be able to compare like real life with the movies. But I think, like you said, right, it becomes this thing where we watch it so much on the screen that even though we consciously know that this is fake, that these are actors, the images that we're seeing themselves are real enough that when we see a real thing, it doesn't affect us as much anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I mean, I think it kind of works like anxiety too. Like, it almost preps you. Mm-hmm. Like, you think of worst case scenario, or your brain comes up with these like terrible versions of reality. And then I think it's almost like, yeah, a defense mechanism. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Or you convince yourself that it prepares you for the...
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly like what I do, right? Like, I had anxiety as a kid, like generalized anxiety disorder. Mm-hmm. And that's one of my tricks. Even now, sometimes when, like, you know, it happens, I have to just tell myself, like, what is literally the worst thing that could happen to me if I walk out my door right now? I could trip, somehow roll onto the street, and someone runs over me. And that's like what I have to think to be able to get myself to like walk out the door. Right,
especially, I think that's like super common.
Yeah, and I think it's a normal thing, right? It's kind of, so it's almost like maybe that's what we channel into making movies, is what is the worst case scenario, and we imagine that it wouldn't happen, but then you see it happen in real life, and you're like, no, what's going on?
I think, yeah, I feel like kind of what you said. I almost feel prepared to die in a really stupid way.
Yeah, just get so, it over
like,
with.
Like a borderline comical, like stupid.
Yeah, like if you guys had to choose one of the deaths in the movie, like, which one would you go for? Out of all the characters, not all the characters, like Dana, Marty, Kurt, Jules, and Holden, like, whose death would you want if you had to be one of them?
I was going to come back to my, like, lady on the CCTV video of just, like, quick and efficient.
No, you have to be one of the characters. Which death would you choose to have?
I guess Jules, because she went first.
Yeah, didn't know any better.
Yeah.
I think I would choose.
Oh, sorry, Fazia, go ahead.
She didn't have to see her friends die.
That's a good point.
Like, I just don't want to see any horrors. Like, I would love to. I went bungee jumping first when I went with the crew. I was like, let me just go first, and then I don't have to analyze the way your neck. Yeah, I don't have to watch your neck as you go down. I'll just go, and if it happens, then.
Yeah. I would choose Kurt, I think. Because he does this, grand speech, how he's going to save them, he's going to do whatever, and he just smacks dead, like, right into the wall. And I feel like that's kind of...
The confusion that would be paired for that with me, just in that split second, almost wouldn't be worth it. Like, I just...
I don't think he would have known, though, right? I think he went pretty hard into that wall. I imagine he went out feeling like he was going to be a hero. And I feel like that's, you know, that's a good way to go if that's how you had to do it.
I could ride that fantasy. Even if it wasn't accurate, I could still, like, imagine that for the rest of everything.
Yeah. Is that the one you would choose, Vizila?
Thought he was going to be a hero and died. You know, a lot of them died very tragically and violently.
I found watching Kurt die, though, that was, like, the most jarring for me. Like, the first time I watched it, I was so... That was, like, a true jump scene for me where I just didn't understand and was, like, truly shocked.
It was actually the opposite for me because of the long speech. I was like, oh, he's going to die. Because, it was too well set up. It was too heroic. So, like, the minute he started that spiel... Yeah, exactly. So, it was like, the minute he started that, I'm like, oh, he's going to die. Either I expected, like... There was going to be some kind of, like, a rope situation. So he was going to get, you know what I mean? Like, some kind of, a garret or something. Like, he would just get, that's what I was expecting. I didn't expect the wall, but I knew that he was going to die in some, like, horrific way the minute he started that speech. But psychologically speaking, he was in a happy place.
Did you ever read the Goosebumps books when you were a kid?
I didn't. I
read a lot of them.
Yeah,
I did too. I think there was a Fear Street as well. Like R.L. Stein did Fear Street as well, and they were like kind of almost like raunchier teen ones, which I remember reading when I was like younger than a teen, and so it was just this like really thrilling thing to read. And then I don't think I ever enjoyed any horror stuff after that.
Yeah,
I mean, other than like obviously the shows that have like gore and stuff in them, but. Yeah, like truly feeling scared. I remember that's the last time I remember enjoying being like truly scared.
Yeah. I always liked Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yeah, the classic pool scene that messed every kid up in our generation.
Oh yeah. Oh my god.
I hated the dollhouse one. Do you guys remember the dollhouse?
Yeah, where she ends up the doll.
Yeah. That was one in my like, oh no.
Honestly, a lot of them were really freaky. I think they were too scary for kids.
They really were. Even if you watch them now, you're like, that's really messed up. Like, you can find episodes on YouTube.
Yeah, I think, too, like, when you're young, even, you can appreciate the creativity that went to making them. Like, they really picked up on all children's fears and, like, took it to an interesting place. Like, something as simple as, like, the pool or a dollhouse or dolls, I guess. But, that's one thing that I thought of with the monsters in this movie as well. Like, I remember watching them thinking, like, I don't think I'm creative enough to, like, make a monster. You know what I mean? Like, even just kind of, I don't know, the Kraken or, like, obviously kind of there's a few classics in there, the clown and that kind of stuff. But there were a few of them where I was like, this is, like, job well done.
Yeah. The merman was pretty disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole, like, I was like, itself already was kind of gross. And then when the blood started spewing out of its spout, I was like, oh, that's an extra level of gross I did not need.
One thing that I think I'm not a big fan of is like the kind of callous treatment of like blood and like human parts. Like I do have to turn my eyes away from, I think, scenes that involve like the spilling of blood in any capacity.
Yeah. Do we need some kind of ending? I feel like we went all over the place.
Yeah,
I
that's think okay. like
the, I would die. So that's kind of, you know, I would die or I would kill all of humanity with no problem. That's my
My conclusion, like right when it started, was just I choose death. I can't deal with this. Like, I feel so tired. Sometimes I spill like half a bowl of cereal and I'm just like so upset, unreasonably so. Like, to have all these things emerge and I think like most of my reaction and most of my conclusion is just yuck and no thank you.
I feel like I kind of said, I don't want to die first. I think my adrenaline will take over and then I'll just be like on autopilot and then I'll accidentally help the monster kill you guys.
But I think you're onto something there. Like, it would be fun to just realize like, just go nuts.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what we just need to thinking, switch.
I guess. Wish fulfillment.
I feel like you could take the monster's Vizila. I feel what? Like I can, like, you can totally go in like berserk mode and then you just kill everything and you're like, oh my God, I survived.
I did it. I'm here. I'm
is
the
that
last
it?
One.
Some more.
Yeah. And then I'll be like, oh, I wonder if Sophia's here.
Yeah. Oh,
there's
crap.
Me playing dead in the corner.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like, yeah. I'm fine.
Irina survives just like playing possum
just
the entire time.
Just waving some other
she's, like, in the closet.
In the air.
Just waiting for that zombie arm to like slink over to me comically.
Slowly strangle you.
We all actually all survived because our tactics worked so well. We were like so meek that the monster just like thought we were Deckel and like overlooked us.
Yes, this is our conclusion. We all win. Everyone else is dumb.
My thing the whole time was like, I want like aerial escape. Like how many of these, I mean the mist thing, but like, could I just like fly away? Like, are there rich people getting in choppers and escaping this whole mess? Like what?
Probably. Know.
Yeah, in that case, again, back to my earlier point, yuck, no thank you.
Get me out.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening in on our episode, People Who Never Watch Horror Movies Review, Horror Movie Episode. If you liked our episode, take a minute to like, subscribe, and email us your credit card number. Or you could just check out our website, smoreadventures.ca, or our Patreon, or our Twitter, or even our Instagram.
Happy roasting! Do 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 do.